you're just seeing this and imagining all these things. And then while you, when you start to get sensory indications of the taste or smell or touch type, tackle type or texture type, then you can go ahead and take your hands off and breathe through both nostrils and get a view or vision of the whole object from the inside, looking out, imagine yourself as the object. And then you breathe in with your eyes open, you close your eyes, you hold it, and you imagine this, the taste and this, the tactile sensations, all that kind of stuff, and then you breathe out with a hum. And then the same thing, when you have finished that, the time comes when you feel the beingness of the object becomes a beingness of you. And it's good for you to be alone and undisturbed and out in nature. And you'll probably not achieve a full communion until you've done this many, many times, but it's good to practice minor conjunctions at all different levels. When you're walking along doing the blessing walk or blessing way, when you're blessing things, you can also inhale them. If you see something beautiful or something wonderful that's blessing you back, or flowers or fragrances, breathe in fully through the nostrils, hold it, and let it out slowly with a hum, and accept it as a gift. And in that act, you are merging in consciousness to some degree. You're making a conjunction with that. as you begin to have successful conjunctions, and how do you know they're successful? Slight feeling of bliss from those minor conjunctions that you do as you're walking outdoors or seeing a sunset or something like that. You will find yourself able to enter into this communion state more easily and quickly than you imagined. And this technique of conjunction emerging will enable you to also draw pranic and other vital ethers from nature for healing and other purposes. And this is the conjunction, the merging techniques, all of them, in eating, in moving, in sleeping, and in meditating. All these merging techniques are then foundational for the third degree empowerment teachings, which come as a person goes into the Episcopate. So this is a sort of the introduction to the merging techniques or the conjunction techniques, the use of the sacred round, and how it will be used. I'll give these things to you. And the only things I'd add to what I say is that the breathing, the information on the kinds of breaths and breathings that can be used with these practices, which is a separate lecture in itself and involves some demonstrations and things, is another section. We can see, feel, and touch in a very evidential way the earthy, watery, and somewhat the airy aspects of our physical bodies, but there is an air aspect and a fiery aspect that is not visible and is not evident. In fact, is measurable only through indirection, and they constitute what we call the four subtle ethers, or the four subtle parts of the body that are extended and understood to be part of the aura, the auric egg. And they are classified as the chemical, vital, the radiant, and the reflective ethers, and in order of subtlety. And they can be visualized as coils within coils, two of them having a direction that is coiled in, from our standpoint looking up, coiled in a counterclockwise fashion, and two in a clockwise fashion. And the relationship of these bodies as they interpenetrate each other is comparable somewhat to the relationship of the elements that together electrically produce magnetism or magnetically produce electricity. If we were to take a coil of wire and send electrical current through it, we would generate a magnetic current. Magnetism and electricity can produce each other. Magnetism is basically a feminine characteristic. It holds, it synthesizes, it brings things together in one point. The The other characteristic of electricity is rectilinear. It radiates. It goes forth and along the conductor and so on in a rectilinear fashion, such that the electrical and magnetic currents can be visualized at right angles to each other, and one of them can be visualized as an outgoing thing, another as an incoming and folding in on itself kind of thing, the magnetic. And when we speak of magnetic fluids that people leave behind and so on, we're speaking of the magnetic aspect of these four subtle ethers that imprint themselves or leave themselves in physical matter as we understand it. Now, I have to also say that the four subtle ethers are in their lower aspects more related to the element of air, and in their higher aspects and in the more subtle aspects more related to the element of fire. And that these four subtle ethers, the chemical ether, we might compare the four ethers to the four means by which we know to generate electricity, where the chemical means, the chemical ethers and the vital ethers are both act on the basis of polarities, which might be compared to negative and positive ions, which produce chemical flow, or to negative and positive charge, which produce static electricity, which may be compared to vital energies, which we know as prana or pranic forces. And the other two, the radiant and reflective ethers, might be compared to other means of generating electricity, one of which is the electromagnetic means, which is produces a rectilinear current along a conducting medium, and the piezoelectric process through which the impacting of crystalline structures produces a radiant electrical effect. There's also we can also speak of things like photoelectricity, which would relate also to this same kind of force. But the analogies that I'm trying to make are that these are basically at the top fiery forces, and at the bottom airy forces with mixtures of fire, and that these are the airy and fiery elements of our being. And it is in these that the kinds of elementals that we classify as salamanders and sylphs exist as part of our identifiable incarnate self through the aura, the auric egg. And the aura is a projection in all of its elements of these ethers. We can look at our body as in successively less dense manifestations. We can look at the earth element within our bodies is the most dense, most concentrated, and most crystallized and least tractable manifestation. The watery elements as carried in channels or through lymphs and things like this through the earth elemental and the earth elements, and that the watery elements as being the main constituent of the body as we know it. And then we can look at the airy elements not only in terms of just the gases that are contained within the body and the blood and things like this, but we can see the blood itself as that which connects us to the higher etheric forms through the gaseous. And the blood is has rightly been called the life and the connection of life, because it is that which in fact articulates between the earthy and the airy and the fiery elements and the watery elements, because it is in fact a substance of fire, of earth, and of air, and of water. And it is in the blood that these elements all have their esoteric congealations. It is also true in other bodily fluids, in the lymph, in the protein substances that we call saliva that are produced by cells, in the ductless glands, in the glandular secretions, and all these things also are contained high concentrations of etheric energy, as well as just lower water and earthy elements. Now, and for this reason, this interaction can occur, that the basic substances, the esoteric and subtle substances that are created in the aura, in the non-tangible part of the physical etheric plane, can be left and imprinted on objects, on things, as we have, for example, in the case of the object that we're purifying, or as we have in the case of breath, when we breathe out a breath, and with a special intention, with a special visualization, and a connection with the heart, we are able to create what we get is called a mumia, which is the to leave the magnetic fluids of ourselves attuned to a higher blessing and in a higher blessing mode. Magnetic fluids can be anything. They can be very positive, they can be very negative, they can be very golden, and they can be very all kinds of other things, and they can carry all kinds of things. And magnetic fluids are is simply a term that is left over from the days of Mesmer, when he envisioned magnetism as a fluid. And in fact, it's not a fluid, it's not a liquid at all. Magnetic fluids are really energies or energy currents or charges, would might be a better way to say it. But we use the terminology magnetic fluids because they can be visualized as fluidic in certain kinds of ways. Now, the reason I mention all this is because these parts of the body, and these parts of the incarnate self, the auric egg and so on, need nourishment just as much as the physical body does, just as much as the visible flesh does. But they are not nourished in quite the same way. For example, the pranic ethers are nourished not by the food you eat directly in terms of the chemical matter of the foods or the sugars or anything else. They're nourished by another substance in the food, which has been called classically in Sanskrit prana. I have been privileged to see, have made visible the little corpuscles of prana that exist in human blood, and that is through special kinds of microscopy photographic techniques that were used by some of the experimenters and developers of esoteric foods and nourishments and so on, that have created films that actually demonstrate the existence of prana as a real thing. And what prana looks like, it's submicroscopic, but it's much larger than molecules and atoms. But it looks like little globules of light, and what we were looking at were not air bubbles, way, way too small for air bubbles. And they vary in terms of all kinds of things, sexual activity, intake of kinds of foods, etc., but they don't come directly from foods. So there are live foods and there are dead foods. The prana in an apple is most live and most present when the fruit is just picked. But apples will retain their prana for a long time. You can buy apples 6 to 8 months after they've been picked and they've been refrigerated, and you can eat them, and they still have perhaps 50% of the prana they had before. But there are other things that you can pick that if you pick them directly off of the trees, they have full prana, but if you wait for some time, they lose it. And you can tell because the vitality of them, gets less and less. The old grapes and things like this, and they begin to decompose because they're no longer able to keep themselves from being invaded by decomposers and things. In the old magical traditions, when these kind of pranic and other kinds of energies were going to be taken and used by magicians, for example, in the getting of a mandrake root, they would sneak up on the mandrake root. They would sneak up on it. And then suddenly reach out, grab it and pull it out, and when they had it, they would quickly put it into the implement they had to do and seal it. Because if they didn't do it that way, it would lose its virtue, which was a pranic-like energy. And of course, the highest quality fruits and vegetables you get are the ones you grow yourself, pick, and immediately ingest, either fresh or cooked right after that. They have the highest content of prana. Prana is collected in things like pine needles. There are certain things that collect solar prana, which is the main kind of prana that we all depend upon. The earth is dependent upon the sun for solar prana. The These are the vital ethers that are nourished by the prana. You nourish your vital ethers by exposing the top of your head, the crown of your head, to sunlight for a certain amount of time each day. And when you don't, when you're not in the sunlight and breathing, you need to breathe. You need to expose the top of your head to sunlight and to breathe deeply or fairly deeply in order to truly nourish that level of your etheric body. And that's why walking is bareheaded, not with your head covered, is an excellent way of intaking prana. But prana can be intaken also using esoteric techniques, if you understand the channels that they flow through and so on. Now, prana flows through channels that exist in the body, not the anatomical body, but run through the body through special channels or nadis that qualify different kinds of forces, not just pranic forces, but what are called chi or ki and other kinds of forces. But there are also flowages of force in the aura itself. And if one were to stand, for example, and to wish to intake solar prana, I will tend to get kind of sleepy by 4 or 5 o'clock, or kind of tired by that time of the day, because of the kind of work I do, standing up and teaching and all this kind of stuff, and I kind of need to rest, sort of poop out before I can go again. But if I know I'm going to have a day like I have today, I will stand out on my balcony in the morning. I will face the rising sun when it's no more than maybe 10, 20 degrees up in the sky. It's best to do it, of course, at sunrise, and I'll tell you why in a moment. And doing just as we do here in the temple, where we visualize the divine heart as a radiant body, we look at it, fix it with our eyes, and we inhale through our nose, and then we exhale through our mouths and go hum. We can do the very same thing, and we can intake solar prana. And what we do here, when you're intaking anything using breath, and this and all that we're going to discuss today are basically intaking practices, practices where you're intaking into yourself, not practices where you are projecting out through the breath, a blessing and so on. But we're talking about communion or converging or conjunction practices where you are becoming one with and joining it to yourself and taking it into yourself. Then by looking at the sun, looking directly at the sun, which is a dangerous thing to do and you don't want to do except under certain conditions. You can look at the sun almost directly without too much harm, either at sunrise or sunset, because there's a whole fat distance of atmosphere between you and the sun, and it filters out a lot of the ultraviolet and a lot of the harmful rays. And even better if there's a little cloud between you and the sun, or if you're looking at the sun through the branches of a tree, or if you look at it by closing your eyes as far as you need to so that just enough of it comes through that it's not harmful to the retina. In any case, you need to be looking directly at the sun, but you need to protect yourself. If you stare at the sun with your eyes open too long, you can burn the retina. You can do damage to it, of course, and you would never do it, of course, when the sun was more than 20 degrees up in the sky. But you need to look directly at the sun to do this. And if it's quite bright and you don't have much protection, you don't have to look steadily at the sun as you in-breathe. You just look at it and close your eyes, look at it and close your eyes. You can just open and close, you can do that. Whatever you have to do, but you do look directly at the sun. You hold it with that, and you in-breathe slowly through both nostrils. And when you do, you visualize golden prana is coming down through the top above your crown in your aura, through the top of the aura, and circulating all the way down around until it goes all the way to the bottom of the aura below the feet. And all that is visualized as you're intaking through the nostrils. When you get to the top of the breath, to hold the breath, don't ever hold a breath in any of these breathing exercises I'm going to give you. Never hold a breath like that, where you're pressing, closing up the muscle to hold the air in like that. That is not how you hold a breath. the interaction, the communion, the conjunction takes place on the holding of the breath. But it's not held that way. It's held just, you breathe in, and you
keep it open like this.
So I was talking breathing in. When you breathe in, you don't close off with any muscles in order to make it easy to hold the breath, like you normally do when you think of holding a breath. You breathe in and you fill up and you keep all passageways open as you're holding in. Now, at the top of the breath, and very often yogis will give you some, count so many of this, and then let the breath out, and this sort of thing. Well, it's how long you hold it is kind of just a matter of taste. It's like how long you chew your food before you swallow it. But you must hold it a certain amount of time. When I'm intaking prana, because it's a very powerful force, I would, the length of my breath might be, now I'm holding it. Now I'm letting it out. Letting it out, as you let the breath out, you visualize this golden energy now recirculating back up from the bottom of your aura all the way up to the top, like a glass filling, and finally it reaches the very top, just as you are reaching the end of your out-breath, and there's where you say, hum, and that seals it. It doesn't leak out anymore. It stays inside you. It becomes part of you. It's like swallowing something when you say hum, when you breathe. So humming the breath on the out-breath through the mouth, not the nostrils, is like swallowing it. Now, what is the difference between the mouth and the nostrils? Well, the mouth is a single orifice. The nostrils are two. The nostrils are the termination points for two of the secondary largest nadis in the body, which are Ida and Pingala, which we will discuss in a moment. And they one of them deals with the left eye, the left ear, and the left nostril, and the left testicle on the left side of the body, and one deals with the right. And inbreathing through both of these masculine and feminine nostrils is the way that one intakes the entire thing. And then outbreathing through the mouth, which is the single orifice, and then ending in a hum, is the way one seals that within one's body. And so to speak, it's your subtle, your nostrils are your subtle mouth, and your mouth is your subtle digestive tract, the out-breath is. Now, in all the breathings that we'll discuss, when I say hold a breath, when I do not mean to hold it in a forced way by closing muscles up like people do when they take a poke on marijuana or something, but rather just to hold it with all the channels open, as though you're poised to breathe in a little more if you want to, or breathe out. It's open. It's completely open. So that's that, I would define that sort of thing. Now, the chakras, I should explain from the very beginning, when I speak of the heart in this temple, I am not speaking of a heart chakra, and I'm not speaking of the heart of the sort of heart that was spoken of by the Master Jesus when he said, out of the heart of man come things that can pollute him, or rather defile him, or things that can sanctify him. The heart is double, the heart has two parts, where we're speaking at that time, of the good and the evil Yates, or the way of death and the way of life, and so on. I'm speaking of the monadic center, the unified center. It has no masculine, no feminine. It is not located where the heart chakra is. The heart chakra is actually located a little bit to the right, on the opposite side of the physical heart. It balances it. Although it takes this whole territory around here in the aura and in the physical body. The heart center that we wear our things over is in the very center of the chest. It's about midway between the actual solar plexus muscle and the Adam's apple, and that is the heart center, and that is the physical location, the monadic heart center. As far as we can fix it, it's essentially the center of your auric egg. Your auric egg extends out farther in front of you than it does behind you, and this is the center of gravity. This is the very center. Now, to speak of the chakras then, the chakras are the seven centers that articulate between the physical etheric body and the higher bodies that we're not even speaking of tonight. We're speaking of the physical etheric body and much of the etheric body. They are etheric structures. The chakras are etheric structures. They are part of your physical body. They disappear. They stop existing when your body stops existing, just as your aura does. Now, They may divide it into 2, 3, 5, 7, or 13 locations in the auric egg. It all depends on how it's done. If they're divided as 2, the 2 main divisions of the lower and higher triads, or the mortal reflective lunar aspect of mankind as a created being, and the immortal radiant solar aspect of mankind as a divinely generated being, is the part that stops at this monadic heart center and goes down and goes up. And we speak of the lower triad and the higher triad. The lower triad is the part of the psychonoetic entity related to the auric egg and to the chakra system that relates to what we call the animal souls and the first five, that which generates the fifth principle or the four lower principles. If we think of the chakras as divided into 3, we can think of them now as the etheric chakras that we might be used to thinking of as the root or base of spine, and as a generative and as a solar plexus. But we will think of as an area in the auric egg that goes from the solar plexus down to below the feet, and then an area, and that it would be the lower third. The middle third is from the sort of top of the solar plexus through the heart and to and including the throat up to the beginning of the cerebellum. And this is called the chalice, this middle section. And then the top section are the head chakras, all the head centers, and the ones above the head. If we divide them into 7, the ones that we're used to seeing are the root chakra at the base of the spine, the generative chakra. These all, by the way, correspond almost exactly to ganglia, large ganglia of nerves that come out of the spine. You can see them on the chiropractor's chart and things like this, the ganglia that come out of these 7 junctures. And if we're speaking in that way, we're speaking about the chakras that are formed of the chemical ethers, and they relate directly to the nerves of the human body. And there, this is root chakra at the base of the spine, at the coccyx. Generative chakra, which is above the genitals and below the belly button and somewhere around the belly button level. And the generative organs are not to be confused with the generative chakra. They are connected to both root chakra and generative chakra. The generative chakra is around the navel level. And then at solar plexus level is the solar plexus chakra. These 3 make up the lower triad. Then we have heart chakra and throat chakra. And they, the heart, throat, and part of the solar plexus are, but mainly the heart and throat chakra consist of what we call the chalice. That is the part of the auric structure, the auric form, but not the auric substance, that survives death and very often is even confused with what people think of as the soul. It is that which contains and cumulatively experience, karma, all these kinds of things. It can be compared to the interior of a flowering plant. I'll talk more about that later. I've got things written down about that, so I don't think I need to talk about this. But and then the higher chakras are considered, for the other 2, are considered to be the ajna, which is between the eyes, and then the crown, or Brahma-Randra, or Sahasrara chakra, which is at the top of the head. Now, and then if we look at them as a division of 13, then we have to understand that the Sahasrara chakra, the crown chakra, is in fact a synthesis of 13 successively higher chakras themselves. When we do our attunements with sound, we are not attuning the chemical ether chakras that are located at these physical locations in the bottom body, although we will visualize it that way. We are in fact attuning the higher etheric chakras that are in the Sahasrara chakra or crown chakra. And you have probably noticed before that the associations we use with color for root, generative, solar plexus, and so on are not the same, not the classical Hindu and Brahmin associations with color. If you look at the colors that they attribute to each of the chakras and so on, they're very different. The chakras that yogis work with are not the chakras that we work with. We work with these chakras. You'll notice that this is from a classic text on chakras with color, you'll notice that the color of these, the sevenfold grouping of these seven areas of the Sahasrara chakra goes from, follows just the colors of the rainbow. It starts from the red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple, and violet. And these are the chakras we're working with. We are not attuning our chemical ether chakras. We're working with crown chakra. We're working with the, and these each relate, as I've given a little chart showing. These each then are directly connected to the chemical etheric chakras that people know of in the body. And but the way we the tones that we use to articulate with these and to work with these, and the colors that we use and the forms, the shapes that we use, which I've got symbolically represented here, are very, very different than the